activists or get involved with initiatives like this. And of course, you can get in touch with me anytime with questions, thoughts, show ideas, anything, michael@coastrange.org. That's my email, and thank you so much for listening to Coast Range Radio. We'll be back in a couple weeks.
It's Greg McVicker, creator of Undercurrents. Glad you're listening. This is KBOO 90.7, Portland.
Be sure to tune into Radio Lost and Found, where many radio mysteries will be revealed. Radio Lost and Found is a two-hour mediascape of found sounds, forgotten records, outre recordings, and more, coming to you every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight, right here on KBOO.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
Hola. Welcome to the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio. Celebrated here on KBOO 90.7 FM, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class. Here on KBOO 90.7 FM, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. My name is Tina Turner Morfitt. I am the current president of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists, and the vice president of the Oregon AFSCME Retirees Chapter. I'm a retired public employee after working 38 years for the Department of Corrections. My union representation was through Oregon AFSCME.
Hello, I'm Dr. Audrey Terrell. I'm the vice president of the Oregon CBTU, and I'm also retired from the UAW International Women's Department from Detroit, Michigan, and also currently the president and CEO of the Dr. Audrey Terrell Institute. Hello.
Good evening, listeners. My name is Deborah Hall, and I'm the current secretary treasurer of the Oregon Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. I'm also a retired member of the American Federation of Teachers, a past president of the classified union at Portland Community College, AFT Local 3922. And currently I'm serving in the city of Vancouver as a commissioner on the Civil Service Commission. Welcome to the show. All right. So tonight, we're addressing the uncomfortable topic of race, class, and white privilege. Across the United States, we're experiencing unprecedented levels of race-based trauma and chaos. An unhealthy amount of this chaos is rooted in subcutaneous anxieties, both imagined and real. The nation has entered a heated political process in that our general election occurs in less than 170 days. With the assistance of our guest tonight, we will explore the effects of an Oregon-based nonprofit organization to shatter preconceived ideas that elevate these uncertainties. Our guest tonight is Shayna Maxie Pomerantz, the Executive Director and Operations Officer of Race Talks. Welcome to our show, Sister Pomerantz. All right. All right. And so my first question is, tell us about the creation of Race Talks and what can you share about its founder and executive director, Donna Maxey?
Well, good evening, good day, good afternoon, whenever you are listening to this. Thank you so much for having me here today. Yes, so Race Talks, the full name is Race Talks, Uniting to Break the Chains of Racism, and it was founded by Donna Maxey in 2011, and this wonderful woman just happens to also be my mother, and so I can tell you a whole lot about her. But she started it in 2011, following an opportunity of being on a panelist at McMenamin's Kennedy School. I want to say it was in 2009, and it was a part of their history pub, which is something they still do to this day. And the conversation was urban renewal. I'm going to say Negro removal, but because that's what we call it. But it was something along those lines.
Uh-huh.
And so she got great reviews, got a lot of people from the neighborhood there. And this was at the time when Albina was already starting to see the transformation from the dot-com boom of folks coming up from the Bay in 2000. So there was already a lot of displacement, but this was at the time when the bike lanes were being implemented into on Williams Ave and Vancouver. And so mom working with Tim Hills and Maceo Pettis from Uniting to Understand Racism, and Tim Hills was heading up the history department at McMenamin's, and she said, hey, Uniting to Understand Racism was overseeing the facilitation of conversations at that time. And I think they kind of morphed into Resolutions Northwest and facilitation program. And so she was able to convince McMenamin's to give her a spot every month at McMenamin's Kennedy School to continue conversations based on the fact that she was seeing, like she likes to say, you know, what she saw on January 6th, which is her birthday, the insurrection, the takeover of our U.S. Capitol, you know, she saw that coming. And what she saw was that if we didn't start talking to each other, we were going to be fighting each other. And so Race Talks was really born from that premise of we need to start talking about the hard things, talking about race, and figuring out some solutions together while we build community.
All right. Awesome. And so please share with our listeners the mission statement and the necessity of Race Talks a little more, expounding on what you were just explaining.
Sure. So Race Talks really stands on the pillars of education, communication, conversation, and compassion. And so, yes, we talk about race, but really our mission is to build community and eradicate racism. And so every month for the past 14, we're in our 14th year. So we, every second Tuesday of the month, we would convene a panel or watch a documentary and then break out into facilitated dialogue. So unlike most kind of lecture style panels or documentaries where people come and watch and then engage in maybe a Q&A session, we actually break out into we're already sitting at circular tables. And so we have everyone present sitting at a table with the facilitator. So everyone you are sitting among, you actually get a chance to meet each other, learn a little bit about each other, and exchange experiences based on not just what you heard on the panel or saw in the documentary, but 9 times out of 10, everybody who has come to that particular month's conversation is coming because they have either some kind of personal experience or they've heard about it and they want to learn more insight. So really the mission of our work is building community and eradicating racism through conversation, compassion, education. And we always like to do it over a meal. Something mom always says is that you know, contentiousness will occur, you know, if you're arguing. And so you tend to be less contentious when you're eating food, because otherwise you'll get an upset stomach. So we always try to encourage people to have a meal present when they engage in these really difficult conversations. And the other thing we do is we always ask people to put their name tags on and introduce themselves and how they identify.
Nice.
And that's significant, because when you're talking about race, a lot of times you don't know who you're looking at. You know, you can make some assumptions. And for people who know me, have seen me, and people who know my mom and have seen my mom, we kind of joke, oh, we look just alike. The reality is we don't look anything alike. And so, you know, I think a lot of times colorism, biracial identity, you know, it's kind of potluck. You come out looking how you look, but that may or may not be a representation of your culture, ethnicity, race, so on and so forth. So it's really important that people are able to identify themselves and also tell people why they're there, so we don't make assumptions about each other when we start off on these conversations.
All right. And thank you. And so, Audrey, I'm going to have you pick up, okay?
Sure. Hi, Sister Shannon.
No.
I just want to share with you that I'm engaged in community projects targeting high school students to start preparing for life and after high school. So let's talk about how your drive to address the uncomfortable discussion about race and white privilege here in Oregon.
Yes, it's a big undertaking, to say the least, you know. And I always say I'd love to be put out of a job. But the reality is that, you know, this has been generational. You all have experienced it your whole life. I'm experiencing it. And unfortunately, it's looking like, you know, our kids and their kids are going to be experiencing this unless we do something drastic. And so the drastic part is we have to start talking about the uncomfortable things, and that begins with access to our history. I used to be a high school teacher, and so in teaching English, teaching history, humanities, incorporating things that are not in the textbooks, you know, and teaching in a way that the students are able to see and learn about themselves. So when I was teaching in the Bronx in New York City, we had a lot of Afro-Latino students who were immigrants, Black and brown, didn't understand how they got to the islands, didn't know what the transatlantic slave trip was, and the whole process of enslavement, didn't understand how we came to this country. And so I think it was just this past week, we had the anniversary of MOVE, which was the bombing of the brothers and sisters in Philly, you know, talking about, you know, to young people that the police would drop a bomb on a city block. It's like, miss, they would never, you know, I always pose it like, what do you think about law enforcement dropping a bomb in the middle of your city?
Right.
That would never happen, miss. Well, let me take you back in history to when it did. And so I think when we start showing people, not just our students, but we have to educate folks, and we see it with white folks all the time. You know, they are taught one side of the story. And if you've heard about it in your church, if you've heard about it from your parents and your teachers and people you have been told you can trust, and then you are presented with new evidence, it's deeply, deeply upsetting. Mm-hmm. And the inclination is to say, no, you're lying. Those people wouldn't lie to me. But what if they were lied to too? Or decided that we want to perpetuate a different set of stories, you know, that have us looking good. Right. And so that's where we're at. You know, we are literally fighting to be able to allow people to share history, read books. Mm-hmm. Just the fact that race talks exists, you know, that's being banned in certain states. So, you know, DEI as a practice, I wouldn't say that our work is diversity, equity, inclusion per se. It's anti-racism, but it's, you know, folks are trying to ban this. They don't want us to live among each other and coexist peacefully. And so as long as that continues to be the issue, we have to be brave and courageous in getting our work out there. And also, we need white folks who say they're allies or want to be allies and accomplices. They got to talk to their racist family members. Yes. You know, that is not our job as anti-racist people of color out here. That is actually their job. And so that is a big component of what we do at Race Talks, is let the white folks know, listen, your job is not to come in to communities of color and tell us how badly you feel about the history. We would feel so much better if you went into the white communities and started addressing the things amongst your own and in your own families, the folks that you don't want to go have, you know, your holiday dinners with because they're too racist. And that, well, how do you think the people who have to work with them feel? They don't have any power or control in those situations. So these are the kinds of conversations that we are having with people and saying, listen, you want to get into this struggle? You want to get into this work? That's where the work starts. Start with the people who are closest to you, because you at least have a relationship with them. And it's important that if we're going to work through this, we've got to build relationships with each other.
It's my understanding that Race Talk has tangible services grouped into three separate categories. Can you share this information with our listeners?
Sure. So we do the community conversations. And so that is one component of the work that we've been doing for 14 years. And I would say probably around 2016, 2017, when I moved back to Oregon, my mom and I started consulting together. And so that is something that we do as a for-fee service, that we consult with organizations who are having race-focused problems and are trying to figure out how to correct it, correct the culture, and also avoid costly lawsuits and embarrassment that can possibly come from not addressing it. And then the third thing we do is we train facilitators. We found that kind of after there was a point where UUR, Uniting to Understand Racism, was kind of phasing out, and Resolutions Northwest was not giving stipends to their facilitators to come, and it just wasn't as consistent at a certain point. And so we were electing whoever showed up to Race Talks. We would say, pick a facilitator at your table to facilitate the problem, you know, facilitate the conversation, excuse me. And you could imagine just all kinds of problems that would come from that. Good intention people with no facilitation skill on how to facilitate conversations of race. So we actually spent about a year developing our own facilitator program. And so we have trained over 100 facilitators, and actually just a couple months ago trained our first all Black woman cohort. So we're really excited. But it's really just very specific to how do you facilitate conversations that center on race and racism.
Okay. I'd like to remind our listeners that you're listening to the Coalition Black Trade Unionist segment of Labor Radio, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class, here on KBOO 90.7 FM, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week.
So how do you begin to unravel decades of exclusionary laws that are detrimental to communities of color?
I mean, I think, again, it goes back to one avenue is you have to create education and awareness about the exclusionary laws and that they existed. So, you know, when I say to folks, you know, when we talk about civil rights, a lot of times folks think, oh, that was way back so far ago. You know, I'm 48. Most people think I'm in my 30s, you know, maybe even in my 20s if they're looking at me. So it looked pretty youthful. When I say, you know, Dr. King was assassinated 8 years before my birth, it kind of puts a little bit of, you know, context on it. Today is Malcolm X's birthday, by the way. You know, he was assassinated on my birthday, February 21st. And so I think when we start talking about the fight and our Black leaders who were executed, you know, for speaking up, Medgar Evers, you know, the countless Black women who were always at the forefront, but always kind of behind the scenes because women weren't really highlighted. You know, this work that we're doing is not new. And so I think we have to really let folks know that this is not a sprint, it's a marathon. So I think when young people are coming to the table and they're protesting, and I love the energy that they are bringing, they're saying, listen, we ain't got no more time. You know, the plant is falling apart. We are not going to be patient anymore. And so I think every generation brings something new, but they need to reach back to the prior generation to find out, you know, well, what was the playbook? And I think what's different now is the technology that we have at our hand. You know, never before did we have camera phones that captured the injustices and abuse that are happening at the hands of law enforcement. So that in and of itself is one way that we start breaking this down. You know, we have to have the evidence. We're going through the court systems. You know, I'm a lawyer. We have to have more lawyers, more people who will take up these cases and be courageous. We have to have people come forward and report what they're seeing and be courageous in speaking up. And you know, again, we need people to run for office. You know, right now we're seeing in just with the city council race in Portland, you know, when Joanne Hardesty and Loretta Smith ran for office, we knew we were going to have the first Black woman on Portland City Council. Mm-hmm. And ever since they ran, and I'm a little biased, I happen to think that anytime a Black woman does it, everybody thinks they can do it. I don't think that's true, but I think everybody thinks they can do it. And so the next election cycle, we saw a gay white man, a Latina woman, a Latino man, a Black man, all elected. And now this cycle, we are seeing countless folks who identify as people of color, immigrant backgrounds, LGBTQ. I mean, so I think we have to have people who come from our community, who have lived experiences, and are unafraid to put themselves out there and say, hey, listen, we need to make a change. And so part of it is you got to have teachers, you got to have lawmakers, and you have to have an actively engaged community.
Just to continue on with Oregon, because I was going to ask you about, you know, how do you go addressing that? Some of these practices are interwoven in Oregon's history of being a white-only state, you know.
Right.
About the elections and...
Right. So part of it is getting that history out there.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, so that's a major component. So again, it goes back to access to the information and educating people about the reality. You know, there are people who had no idea that this was a thing. And now we're seeing, because of social media, you know, I'm seeing Instagram and TikTok posts being put up saying, you know, did you know there was a whites only state? You know, which one did you think it was? And folks are like, Texas, Georgia, right. You know, it's like, no, Oregon, yeah. Isn't that supposed to be Portlandia, the cool state, you know, all green and, you know, you name your chickens? No, it's racist, whites only Oregon. And I like to tell people, you know, Oregon was so racist, Jim Crow didn't come live here. So, you know, that puts it in a perspective that, you know, this is a tough place for Black and brown folks when they come here. And I marvel that my grandparents thought that it was such a good idea to leave East Texas, where they had the highest lynching rate in the country, to come here thinking they would have a better opportunity. And I just marvel at the level of bravery and courage that they had to come here. But they did, and they found community, and they started businesses and owned homes and, you know, really thrived. But I just can't even imagine what that was like. And so I asked my grandmother, who died at 101 in 2020, she had a chance to vote in that election before she passed. And I said, you know, do you feel like these times are worse or not as bad as when you know, were coming through the civil rights era? And she said, actually, I think it's worse.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Sister Pomerantz.
Yes.
On a nationwide scale, Oregon's approach to some of this madness that we've been talking about reflects less chaos than in other states. And the chaos I'm talking about is in regards to like voting rights, reproductive rights, and healthcare. We have made some grounds in order to protect those rights.
Yes.
Although the 2020 U.S. Census reflects that Oregon's population is growing more diverse, my concern is that there's been kind of like a inadequate job of directly addressing this growth. So what do you suggest would offer a better way to address the needs of communities of color?
Well, I think you got to talk to the communities of color first. One of the things I notice in doing anti-racism consulting work and sitting on a lot of these committees, you know, that want to tap into DEI and equity, you know, within our city and counties and state, you know, advisory bodies, so often they'll end up hiring consultants, right, to figure out how to correct the issues. And 9 times out of 10, those consultants are from outside of Oregon. Or if they are hired within Oregon, they might be white and really expensive and not necessarily folks of color from the community. And so I think changing the practices of how we engage people of color, you know, if you want to truly engage folks and find out how to improve livability, access, equity, safety, you have to talk to the people who are in the communities and say, ask, what do you need? And how can we get you the resources? Mm-hmm. So often people are asked and then completely ignored after they give the answer, you know? And so I see that time and time again. And so then that means, well, we don't have the right people who are really vested in our best interests in the decision-making roles, which means we have to put people in those positions. And so we are able to not just engage with those communities, but be in the decision-making roles to make sure resources are being provided, money is being allocated, so on and so forth. And then other thing I notice about Oregon specifically, you know, I remember the hip hop artist Aminé had a whole billboard campaign a couple of years back that said, you know, there really are Black people in Portland. You know, a lot of folks don't know that nationally. And I don't, even though we have, you know, bureaus like Travel Portland that, you know, market to a lot of the really great things that happen here in Oregon and why people should come here, the reality is a lot of times we're not highlighting a lot of the activities that folks of color are taking part in, you know? So we have hiking clubs and rock climbing clubs and biking clubs, you know, for people of color, Black folks, brown folks.
Ski clubs,
you know, pick it, you know, folks are out here doing it. And so I think making sure that we're highlighting that, you know, directing people on how to find the resources. And then additionally, we have to make sure that when these big employers are recruiting people to come into the state, one, they are also hiring from within the state. You know, that's one big problem I see is that a lot of these large companies, without naming names, have had policies in the past of not hiring local folks of color. Mm-hmm. And so that's discriminatory. And then they hire folks of color from out of state and then don't link them up through, you know, to the communities. And so sure, these people don't end up staying. Or if they do stay, they're so far removed and completely inundated with the work that they do that they're really isolated, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that is also a problem. So I think, you know, how do we solve the problem? I think one step at a time. You know, there's a lot of different areas that have to be addressed, but we got to get the racist language off the books. We need to make sure that the good things that are here that are serving us well, that we continue to protect it. So this continues to be a safe haven, not just for us, for people who from other places who need to come here and make space. But, you know, yeah, volunteer, work for some elected officials so you get a sense of what that political office is like.
Okay. Thanks a lot. And thank you for coming on our show tonight.
This was awesome.
Sister Audrey, can you go ahead and close this out?
This was awesome.
Yes. I'd just like to know if she has a website information that we our listeners can better track her progress, if she could share her website.
Absolutely. And also, we have an event coming up with Race Talks on June 13th, because it's both Juneteenth and coming up, as well as June kicks off Pride, even though in Portland we do it, in Oregon we're doing it in July. But June actually does kick off Pride. So we have an event called the Third Annual History of Black Drag in Portland. And so folks can go to Race Talks and keep up with Race Talks on Race Talks PDX, RACETALKS PDX.com. And for our BIPOC and QT BIPOC folks, we have free community tickets that people can access on our website for our June 13th event. And then for my election, hopefully when they're listening to this, Tuesday is our 2 days from now is the primary. Hopefully I'll win, so I'll still be a viable candidate in the race, but they can visit shaynaofthepeople.com.
Right.
Thank you so much, Sister Shayna. The Coalition of Black Trade Unions, we meet the second Tuesday of every month at 6 p.m. We have suspended our face-to-face meetings and are utilizing Google Meet to conduct our monthly meetings. Our next meeting will be held on June the 11th, 2024. So come check us out on June 15th at the Portland Juneteenth celebration.
All right. And thank you once again, Sister Pomerantz. Thank you for your courage to facilitate this serious conversation in Race Talks. If not now, then when? And listeners, our